Hi everyone, welcome to the Mac Show. Whew, wow, sometimes it's hard to just get rolling in the morning. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your host, and I am so glad that that the usual backup crew is here for me because without them, the show would, well, it would definitely be interesting watching me sitting here saying things like, "What show is this?"
The
Wait,
gr ground control to Major Jeff.
yeah. Oh, I don't know if my thrusters are on.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Oh, Chuck, you have no idea, but I could draw you a picture.
Oh, you could.
Oh.
Please don't.
No, actually, I want to see that.
Well, that's one of us, Patrice.
And apparently, I just told everyone in the Slack room that the big show is live.
Oh, good.
There wasn't a big show.
There wasn't a big show, so yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's, hey. All right, I'm gonna pretend like I'm actually awake enough and functioning enough to accomplish a show. But in my defense, how was that different from any other day?
I
Point
don't know. I
taken.
have no answer for that one.
Please, I protest. I protest.
Yeah. Hey, that wonderful voice, our protester. In residence, that's Marty. How are you doing?
I woke up this morning late, so I got to sleep in a little late and got a good night's sleep, and then doom scrolled for about an hour and a half until the power went out, and then realized the only thing that I could do while the power was out was doom scroll some more. Power came back on about 10 minutes, 15 minutes before the show, so I'm ready to go.
That's absolutely fantastic. The power coming back on part, the doom scrolling and the power out, not so much.
Maybe that was
So
related. You doom scrolled so much that they ran out of
you
power.
took the grid down.
Yes.
There were a hundred and or there were 1,700 people that apparently were doom scrolling, because that's what they announced. Was the
That'll do
power
it.
was out to 107 or 1700 users.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yep, that'll do it.
The AI looked
Hey.
at it and was like, yep, that's too much.
Yeah, shut those people down. Yep. Patrice, how's it going for you?
I mean, I'm a surprise guest today because I was not planning on being here. I had scheduled a flying lesson. Unfortunately, it was too windy. I went to the airport because we were hoping it's like, oh, it's just borderline. It might be fine. We'll just see. Was like, I mean, it's a nice sunny day. Worst case, I'll get like a nice walk out of it, and I'll go to the airport and meet lovely people, and like I'll come back. And I managed to make it back before the show, so that was not planned, but I'm here, so
But
I'm
it's
good.
a happy surprise.
It's a happy surprise. It's been a crapshoot of a week. I mean, which was probably even good that I didn't fly too much today because I haven't slept much this week between daylight savings change, and so that resulted in me sleeping between 3 and 4 hours a night, and then the Artemis launch, which also took some time away from my night because it was so interesting. I was just watching it the entire time while doing other things. Yeah, I not slept much this week. I mean, last night was not too bad. It was like 5 hours, so I felt good enough to fly, but I'm like, it's probably also not too bad if I didn't.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm
Yeah.
glad that you had a oh, Bob, the artist, the big hair artist from PBS,
Bob Ross?
Bob Ross. You
Yeah.
had a Bob Ross moment because you had a
Yeah.
happy
Yes.
accident. The
Yes.
wind
Yes.
let you come back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is it. It was The rules say, what was it, 10 knots from the front and 5 from the side. So let's say 15 is okay. It was beyond 20. So like, no bueno. And I also didn't want to. Like, I looked at it and I'm like, I've done 13 knots with like 19 gusts and it was no fun. So I'm okay with that. I handled it, but it was not fun. Yeah, exactly like that, Dave. It's shaking and it's like, yeah. So yeah, I'm here. But I had a good afternoon. I did zero. I did a Marty. I technically worked today until noonish. I did not really do anything useful.
Well, you did fun.
Yeah, afterwards. So but for work, that. I did not much. I kind of, read some documents and listened to Artemis. And that was it.
You know how to party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of the party man himself, Dave Ginsburg.
I thought you would say Dave? Chuck.
No, I mean, Chuck is quite the party man. That's absolutely true. But Dave takes it up to a whole new level because Dave actually flew all the way out here just to be here for my birthday back in January.
Mm. I did. That was fun.
That was super fun.
Yep. Then you gave me a nice tour of the area too. I had a lot of fun.
Did you get to see the Stargate?
No, I don't think we did see that.
Jeff, you missed a trick. Should have gone to Cheyenne Mountain with him and showed him the Stargate.
I should have. Yeah, that's on me. Dave will just have to come back out and we'll go break into Cheyenne Mountain together.
Yes.
Dave, it'll
be
great.
Uh-huh.
Doing well. It's Friday and I got the holiday coming up in Easter Sunday. And interesting, I got an email this morning about Wonder Lake. Jeff and Chuck have been there. We had a ton of rain last night, and they got the warning that stay off the lake. It's over 500,000 gallons of water from all the rain from yesterday, and they have a USGS graph, and it started flatlined, and then it goes way at the top.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay. Wow.
So you said you better get your belongings off the edge. There might be some, it might be going over the seawalls, and yeah, so you had some pretty bad rain last night. It was a lot worse up there, so. But doing great. Glad to be here.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. It's well, Dave lives a life of intrigue and adventure.
Yeah. Bet he does.
Try my best.
Yeah, and speaking of intrigue, Chuck, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. I'm good. It's funny though, listening to Marty, for some reason, and I don't know why, there seemed to have been a lot of power blips last night. We didn't have any significant weather here, but I had one that really screwed up my systems and everything like power blips do. But I, for the first time ever, during or after a power blip, I had to unplug and replug one of my Thunderbolt docks, which was... it wasn't working. Yeah, it wasn't working. Plug it back in, and everything started going through, and the internet connection came back. But it was very strange. So Marty, I couldn't even doom scroll.
You know, and the weird thing was we didn't have bad weather. It's like 65 Fahrenheit and high clouds, but no, it was a unbeautiful day to lose power. Can't figure it out.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't understand it either.
Well, I'm glad that everyone's power is working, and that that we can all be here, because it's always a treat to hang out with all of you. So, hey, real quick before we hop into Apple News for the week, two things. Dave, thank you, as always, for letting us crib from In Touch with iOS show notes. And then I have a follow-up to last week's sad announcement about John Martellaro passing. His funeral was yesterday as we record, so that would be April 2nd. And I was able to attend, so I represented for all of us. And it was a very nice, very special ceremony. He even had military honors, and I'm glad I was able to be there for myself and for all of us. So, yeah. Okay, now we can do some news, Apple stuff, and I feel words. Like words. Okay, in my defense, English is a really messed up language.
Tell me about it.
I mean,
I would say
I can tell you one thing: German is worse. So.
Many of our listeners are saying we're the reason it's messed up.
Okay, I can't argue with that at all. I mean, I could try, but it would be pointless. Yeah.
You would lose that argument.
And I would lose it quickly with poor word choice.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Obligatory discussion, which doesn't necessarily mean it will be a bad discussion, but... obligatory discussion. Apple turning 50. Their 50th anniversary was April 1st, so just a couple days ago. And Apple did a bunch of celebration events leading up to the anniversary. They mm-hmm. have some videos that are out, and
They had a hilarious video on the first on Apple.com that they took down, I think, the day after already. So,
oh, I missed seeing that.
There was, and I think it is available somewhere in one of the many articles. There was basically a video that showed all the Apple devices throughout the year, so like most of them. There was like a funny little audio glitch like around the mid 90s, which was chef's kiss. But the funny thing is, there was a rewind on it. If you played it backwards, it was the music for the Think Different ad.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Brian Chaffin was telling me about the
yes.
about
it's a rewind this. Video.
I didn't realize yes. that was the thing yeah. on the webpage.
And, yeah, okay. That was on the webpage. So that is it. That was Chef's Kiss, hilarious, and really, really well done.
That's super cool.
And it's not long. It was like a minute or so.
I think this is one time where it's appropriate and probably accurate to say, well, if Steve Jobs was alive, this never would have happened. I don't think he would have approached the 50th anniversary celebration in the way that Apple is right now.
Probably not, but it's also fine because it's a different company and different people
yeah.
these days, right? So,
and yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm glad Apple recognized and did things for the 50th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think you're right about Steve, because Steve was notorious for looking ahead and not really wanting to look back too much. Mm-hmm. At the same time,
doesn't mean
he
didn't, but. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. But you know, as he got older too, I just wonder if maybe that sense of time might have changed his at least part mm-hmm. of his thinking.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah. you do it. I mean, this is what we're all doing. We still do it. Mm-hmm. You know, what would Steve yeah. have done?
Yeah.
And no matter how many times we say we shouldn't, we do.
No, I mean it's kind of natural to do that. The intention was not to not ask the question. It's just not to follow what he would have done, because one, you don't know, and two, it's also not the right thing for you. I loved also the letter that Apple or the Tim Cook sent to the employees, because it was the right mix of thanking people for the time, like no matter how long they had been, like including also the people that had been less than a year and the people that had been there for decades, but also basically ending on a high note of typical Apple, looking forward and saying like, I'm very excited what's to come, and like, I know we're the right company for it, basically.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice letter.
Yeah, And short. It was not rambling. It was like, it was very short and to the point. Yeah. I have to say,
I wanted to mention,
yeah, I've been talking. I wanted to mention, I really loved all the people that had their own stories to tell. And they were like, for sure, the let's say, usual voices, or the voices you would expect. But there were also people that were like, what's his name? James Thompson, I think, from Peacock. Was it him? I don't remember. Might be mixing up names now. But anyway, Peacock guy.
I think it's James.
I think it's James, yeah. And it was like, yeah, I was at Apple for 4 years. Nothing I did mattered at all. Very few things actually ever saw the light of day. And there were little things that kind of made it, but I really didn't matter. But I still felt proud of having done it. Right? And I love that kind of message to say, like, not everybody is the like, oh, I whatever made a massive difference in people's lives, whatever. There's so many people at Apple that, but that's not the case. And they still contribute somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, and many of those people, they may not have made a difference in people's lives outside of Apple, but they worked with people inside the company. They may well have made a difference for their coworkers.
Yeah, exactly. So I said, I loved all those little side stories and fun things.
Yeah, me too. All right, so what I was going to say, turns out I think it fits nicely with what you did just say, Patrice. I have a question for all of you. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. We're 50 years in to Apple, so there's a lot of products the company's made over the years. I'm curious, do you have a favorite Apple product and why? And I'm asking all of you. I will go first because I had time to think about the question since I came up with it, and I can tell you my favorite product is the Pismo PowerBook G3, because that was the Mac that had the most versatility and allowed me to do things with a computer in ways that I had never been able to do before. And that thing was a tank. It was super upgradable. I replaced and upgraded everything in it that I could. I added in an AirPort card. I maxed out the RAM myself. I replaced the hard drive with bigger hard drives twice. And you had the bays. You could swap out the stuff that goes in the bays, and mm-hmm. it was just an absolutely wonderful computer. And I do have a follow-up to that. I think my second favorite product, it's, and this one's very nostalgic for me, was the Apple II GS. I had the WAS edition, so when it first came out. And that was a super versatile computer also. I took the expansion cards out of my Apple IIe clone, mm-hmm. popped them into the 2GS, and just kept running with them. So I had a computer that could run Apple II programs,
mm-hmm.
2GS programs, and CPM. Because I had a Microsoft CPM card in there that came out of the mm-hmm. the Franklin Ace 1000.
Wow.
And yeah.
It's a difficult question you ask, because it's like,
I know there's so many choices.
Yeah, it's like, is it the first? Is it the most impactful? I'll give you, since you gave two, I'll give you my top two. The first one is actually the Vision Pro. I'm a forward-thinking person, like I think Apple is. And I mean, it has already influenced my life quite a lot, meeting tons of really cool people and having a lot of really good exchanges across the world, like literally from Australia to Canada, US, Hawaii. Like, it's basically really China. I've talked to, for the first time in my life, probably to people in China. Like, it's just been really cool. And I think it has so much potential. And I can see where it's going, and I can see probably nothing really, because like, it's hard to predict the future. So I'm people are, there's tons of naysayers, but for me, this is the most important one, and also the latest, right? And the other one is my first, the black MacBook, because that was the one I bought. That was the one I bought. That was the first Mac I ever, I mean, I barely knew about Apple, I think a year before, 2 years before. I think, 2 years before, I knew barely about it, that the that Apple even existed. Wasn't a thing in Europe, wasn't a thing in Germany. But it, I mean, it brought me to all of you. It brought me to a really cool communities, to like, to go to WWDC, to meet a lot of people. And I think that influence of like your life, you cannot underestimate.
Yep, I get it.
Okay, I'll go.
Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
This is probably a little bit of a cop out, but I have to pick the Mac, but I'd have to pick the Mac that sits in front of me right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever that is at any given moment, because of all the tools, and I take nothing away from the iPhone and its impact, or the iPad and its impact, or the AirPods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the Mac is still the thing that, it's my go-to. It's my, you know, Swiss Army knife of tools, and it lets me do more than I could ever possibly have done, you know, by myself. There have been Mac models that had features that I love. There have been Mac models that had features I didn't really care that much about. But everyone has gotten better overall. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the way I look at it. And I think of all the things that have happened to me because of my Mac. You know, from personal things to work things and everything in between. You know, creative things that just were never in my wheelhouse. And so, if you know, that again, that may be a cop out, but I just have to say, you know, that the Mac, my main Mac now, is my favorite, and the next one I buy, I almost certainly will be my favorite.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's like,
I don't think that's a cop out.
Exactly. I mean, this is the best Mac probably that, no, it is the best Mac that has ever existed until the next one comes out.
Right.
And I think that's also something that makes Apple very unique, right? Because there's companies that don't follow that path. Doesn't mean that there weren't times where the Macs weren't so great, but it was kind of more a lateral move, not a going down.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And not just the hardware, but, you know, just, I guess, the whole package. The OS, for sure. You know, everything. That's because if you start talking about, you know, specific hardware packages, maybe okay, but end of the day, you know, just
the package.
What it lets you do is and look, I'm going to go ahead and say it, I would never have even attempted half of these things with a PC.
You wouldn't have been able to probably.
Well, you know, I didn't want to go quite that far, because everybody says, well, eventually, you know, they kind of go back and forth on capabilities, but I would never have had the patience, the desire to do it.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that. Yep.
I'll go. I just thinking about that. I mean, yeah, the Mac had some meaning in my life. I got in late, like Patrice. My first Mac was the white MacBook Intel. Well, kinda. I mean, I got a used G4 PowerBook 12-inch as a friend donated to me, but that's really where I got hooked. But the product that really influenced me throughout my life is the iPhone, and that's obvious with the podcast I do. I talk about iPhone all the time. I've owned every iPhone since the 3G because I trade in every year. So it's been a product. It's been part of a long, you know, getting close to 20 years of having an iPhone in my life. And there isn't a day I mean, all of us, and it's how it is with a mobile phone. We have it in our hands all the time. We're always looking at it. We're always, you see it everywhere. But I think that's why Apple is so successful selling. They just sold their 3 billionth, shipped their first 3 billionth iPhone. It's crazy to think about. But
they're probably close to 4 by now.
Yeah, it's going to get close to, yeah, after all this stuff's done. And there's only, 9 billion people on the planet? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty remarkable. So I just watching the evolution of iOS, seeing how all the apps got going back from when you couldn't even copy and paste in the old days to going to now where you can pretty much do everything. You basically have a computer in your pocket, and you pretty much did. I did not buy the first one because I just wasn't ready. But once I saw it, I was hooked. And so I think that inspired me, is I got sick of working being on AT&T, so I switched to Sprint at the time in the U.S. So,
Sprint,
yes.
Well, actually, I'm sorry. Wow, flipped that over. I was on Sprint, but then obviously the iPhone was only on AT&T at that time.
So you had to switch.
I switched to AT&T. Yeah. I switched from Sprint, and then ironically, I go back to kind of the Sprint because I'm on T-Mobile and they bought Sprint. So, but yeah, that's really what got me got me going was the iPhone. It's just, yeah. And then I think probably everybody here can probably say that it's been, a very, very integral part of our lives.
It is.
Even Tim Cook said it in an interview about the fact of what was his most important product, and he said the iPhone. I mean, he when he was there in 2007, when Steve introduced it, that was probably the most remarkable product ever. And I still remember back to that photo of you, Jeff, looking at it, and then it was all through the media, through that big glass.
And it still shows up at times. Shows up.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't iPhone
that until recently, so it's like within the last couple of years. So
the iPhone literally went to space just like on the like it's going to the moon right now. Like it's on the way there.
A lot of us too.
Yeah, there's three or four iPhone 17 Pros. Unfortunately, not in orange. I'm like, why did you not get the cosmic orange? It makes no sense.
Right.
Like that was the perfect. That was the perfect thing.
And I know Marty hates this color.
Yeah, please keep that out of my
face.
It
has in the name that, like, why not? But okay, it's corporate, right? NASA is just a corporation.
I like to call it presidential orange.
maybe that's why.
Something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah. How can you ignore that? I mean, the iPad was right behind it, and I love the iPad too.
The phone that almost didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
It almost didn't end up being like that. And
yep. And
disappeared.
Yeah. And so listening to everyone talk, and Marty's going to have the best product, I'm sure.
Yes.
But listening to everyone talk, it's interesting to me because I went for nostalgic things, not life-changing things. Although the 2GS and the Pismo, they were to a degree life-changing devices for me. But I mean, I can clearly look at products through Apple's history and say, yes, this product here was life-changing for me. And of course, the iPhone fits into that mix too. So Marty, please.
You know, I listened to people's responses, and before people started responding, I went to one thing that I thought was more nostalgic. I do agree. For me, it's not my top choice. It's not my nostalgic pick, but Vision Pro is just incredible. And most recently, I've been spending all of my time with the Neo. And I'm like, what a product. And I agree with Chuck. It's the computer that's in front of me at the moment. And that's the computer that's in front of me at the moment. My nostalgic pick for number one would be the iPod. And I really miss the iPod. Having something the size of a stick of a gum or a little bit bigger with a screen on it. with all the tunes I want on it and the screen with the album covers that are connected to it. And it's like, oh, well, maybe I don't want to carry that big pocket phone around just to listen to music. I can get a little one that's about the size of the postage stamp when I go to the gym to work out, and that works just as fine. I miss that product line. I was hoping that the 50th anniversary they would get nostalgic and maybe put some of these older products out. Mm-hmm. That was fantasy. They're too busy with their current products. They're forward thinking. Yes. Mm-hmm. But man, I that one shifted my whole way of I listened to more music back then because I had that kind of availability than I do right now, and the portability where I could listen to it. And it made me think this company has some really cool products, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agree. Talking about the iPod. See, that's another product that was life-changing in a way for me, because it did let me completely change how and when I listen to the music that I want to hear.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I, Marty, I still have most of the iPods that I've owned over the years. So I will dig out the box, and I'm going to take a photo just for you.
Yeah. That's kind of
I have them somewhere. And some, like the one that I really love, it doesn't connect anymore. That's one thing. But I started to get screen lines in it when it did connect. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have an honorable mention that I want to mention.
Mm-hmm.
It is all the engineers from the very beginning to the very end who engineered all the chip transitions and the chips. Because I think Apple is, to my knowledge at least, the only company that has done, I don't know how many, 5 chip transitions by now. Like from the very early days to now, and done them mostly flawlessly. And mm-hmm. I mean, in a way that, like, they got better and better over time for sure. But I mean, it's something that nobody else seems to be able to do. I mean, to the point where they now design, started in the, what was it, late 2000s, I think, or early 2010, to design their own chips, get them to a point where they, like, can be on the Macs and on all devices, basically. And do a full-on chip transition that was so smooth. I mean, there were probably some issues somewhere where some edge cases didn't work properly, but I have not heard of them.
You are right. The engineering that went into making those transitions happen, and I know I've said this before probably way too many times, but doing it once is a marvel. Doing it, what, four times?
Four or five, I think.
68,000 series to PowerPC, PowerPC to Intel.
Yeah, and then Intel to...
And then Intel to M-series.
I thought they had, I mean, from the... No, they had...
So that's four.
There was one more, right? Because they went from the... What was that? The original? There was one more in the really early days.
Before the 68,000 series?
68K.
Yeah, I thought so. Well, I thought there was one where they had to basically, where you had to rewrite all your apps because there was a different processor. And they had an add-on board, an add-on chip, so that you could basically run both. I remember that. That was the, was it the Apple, huh. One of the Apple IIs, or was it?
With the Apple series, that was the 6500 series processors.
Yeah. That should count.
Yeah, but that counts. Yeah. There was a transition there where they basically tried to switch the processor. I mean, back in the really bad days where they tried to switch the processor and basically the apps would have needed to be rewritten, and they found a way to not do that. Wasn't entirely successful. I just listened to what my cool thing will be today, the David Pope book. So that's why. I remember that.
Okay.
I was not aware of that. I wasn't even alive when that happened.
I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I do remember the 6502, that was the Apple II line.
Yeah.
And then they went to the 65C816 for the 2GS.
Yeah, maybe that was the GS, I think.
You're right, because it was running Apple II software and 2GS software.
Yeah, exactly. That was the one, but that was as I said, it was another transition. So that's why I'm saying I think it was.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Yep. All right.
Yeah, yeah, as I said, that one was not very successful, but it still did. They still had a solution.
Yeah, but I forgot all about that one. There was that period where they were trying to take advantage of the new capabilities, but still hang on to the old, like so many people wanted them to, and rightly so.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have a hypothesis on the GS's ultimate failure, and it doesn't have anything to do with capabilities, because it was actually too capable, and And I think there were a lot of people that did exactly what I did. When it was time to move on from the Apple II itself, it's like, well, the Mac is out, but the 2GS is out. And you start comparing features. Mm-hmm. The 2GS was actually a much more powerful and versatile computer than the Mac was at that point.
But the Mac had a better interface.
it was basically the same interface, but in color.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there were more apps, well, programs coming out for the Mac, but you could still get professional, like business software for the GS. Mm-hmm. The graphic software was actually superior on the GS, better audio capability. It was like down the line, I'm looking at everything I could do, and I could still run all the software I already had. It's like, why would I buy a Mac when I can get a more powerful computer and still have access to the software I've been using for years?
Yeah.
And ultimately, Steve Jobs is like, nope, nope, nope. It's got to be the Mac.
I think there were more reasons, but
I think there were. Of course there were. There's always more reasons. It's never as simple as I just don't like that.
One thing was, from what I remember from the book, that you could not run the GS and the two apps in parallel, basically. So you always had to switch.
Oh, yes, that is true. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
That made it a little bit hard to really take advantage of the GS's like, capabilities.
Yeah, I remember that now. I'd forgotten. It's like if you're doing something that was ProDOS specific.
Yeah.
There was a keyboard command you would do that would switch you to the command line interface.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then switch you back to the graphic interface for the GS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Five that's processor true. From OS. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said, and they did it. Like, I mean, as I said, I'm not aware of anybody who has done it that smoothly for also that many, in some cases, developers.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. All right, we should talk about more, at least one more story.
Sure.
And so I'm thinking, let's talk about Apple deciding to improve, I'm sorry, and shitify Apple Maps by selling ads. And so for those of you that haven't been following along, and by the way, I believe this is US only for now.
Right.
When you do your searches in Apple Maps, it's not yet, but it will be in like 26.5, I think.
Yeah.
You will get ad results as well, like you do in Google Maps. And
confirmed, right? It's mostly they found like references in the code.
So, okay, true. Found references in the code, and there have been rumors for a while that this is coming. but Apple hasn't officially said we're putting ads in.
Oh, Apple never mind. Apple did. It says in the article. So I thought they had
only. Oh, they did.
But Apple confirmed it. So this right, summer well then, it's coming. Yeah.
Okay, then I'll stick with Intuitification.
Yeah, so I was wrong. Yeah. I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know. I think this is a very. I mean, I don't want to apologize for Apple. If it is really a bad experience, then I'll admit that. I think this is a smart move. Because, you know, Apple is, especially on the businesses side, quite behind.
Oh, definitely.
Like, yep. Like a lot of businesses, like they will update their, I mean, we see that all the time. Like they're like there's a new business or some change or just in general, just keeping up with things. And the business is like up to date in Google Maps and it's like non-existent or behind on Apple. And I've been submitting like left, right, and center things. Like whenever I see something, I'll submit it to Apple. Maybe this is a way to through the back door to get businesses to actually care about it and say, hey, like you can advertise to people and then they will keep their shit updated.
You know, I don't know if care is the right word here. I think it might be education. The number
could be,
of
yeah.
businesses I've encountered that have no idea you can even submit your business into Apple Maps. I mean, it's surprising. And
I think that's a big looked... part of care. Indeed.
Well, there could be that too. Also, historically, I don't know what it's like today. So I don't know if this is still the same, if it's still the same. But it's actually been much more of a process to get your business into Apple Maps compared to Google Maps.
It's not. I've done that a million times already. It's quite easy to get, like, I mean,
so much
to get a
now.
Business in, to get a business in, just have it listed is like anybody can do it. You can claim it then as your business. I don't know how that process works, but I can submit one. It's not a problem.
So I'm sorry. I mean, for the business itself, like to claim the business.
Yeah, that and... I don't know. Yeah. I've never done that.
For me, it's how disruptive is this going to be? You know, the time I use Apple Maps is when I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how is that going to impact or how the ad's going to come up and not be distracted driving? You know what I would think might be an interesting option if it was switch on and switch off? Would be to integrate it with like a Frommer's or a travel guide. Mm-hmm. So when I'm driving down the highway, the ad that comes up, because maybe someone has paid for it, is this at this next, you know, in 2 miles, you can go here or get something to eat here, or there's an interesting thing you might want to stop and look at here.
Yeah.
That seems like a better, I mean, for me, that would be a better integration. I don't know what this is going to be like, but
I mean,
I don't necessarily blame Apple for
it. But that's exactly what I think what Google even is doing. I think that's exactly what Apple will do. It's basically on your map, it will like more prominently show businesses that, like, if you're just looking at a map, like nothing searched for, or you're driving, as you said, down, it might show you businesses that have paid for it. Or that might be interesting. But I think also in search results, right? When you're looking for a business, those will be more prominent. I mean, that's how Google even does it. Like there's the paid entries and then there's the relevant ones. Well, the paid ones might also be relevant. No, sometimes they are. Not kidding. Sometimes they are because Google is also interested in showing you things that you would actually tap on. So they usually do that quite well.
For me, the most common app I use when I'm driving is Yelp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I don't use it, but the person sitting next to me is. It's like, it's time to eat. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Patrice, I'm kind of glad to hear you say what you did, because it feels like everybody's having this instantly negative reaction. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it and saying, okay, it all depends on the implementation. Because maybe it will help me now. And there are a million questions here to answer, but maybe it'll help me identify things around me. I mean, that to me is how they could implement it and have it be beneficial, that I would have a better idea so that something catches my eye. you know, I can think of a dozen ways it can go wrong. I can think about half a dozen ways it could go right. So I'm willing to say, you know, let's see this. Mm-hmm. Let's find out. If you think about, and I'm just kind of riffing on things here, but there are apps out there that will tell you, you know, what is off every exit on a given highway, mm-hmm. you know, as far as food and gas and lodging and those kind of things. Popping those up, especially if I had the ability maybe to select some preferences that, yeah, I want to know about all the restaurants, but I really don't need to know about all the lodging, you know, that could be super helpful as, mm-hmm. as I'm traveling. So I'm willing to accept this as a new layer of information that could be delivered to me on the basis of A, my location, and B, my preferences. And yes, I know we're talking about location tracking, but on the other hand, if you're using maps, you got to just accept the fact that you're being tracked location-wise.
And Apple historically has been a company that does that in a very privacy-conscious way. But I mean, just to play devil's advocate for a second, it's also good for Apple's bottom line and Apple services.
Everybody acts like that's such a terrible thing.
No, it's not a terrible thing, Apple, but it's also
Apple might wants be to make money. Some money off of this. Yeah, I mean, come on. Jeff has said a million times, Apple is not your friend. Apple is a corporation. They're a business. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, fine. There are ways to make money and abuse mm-hmm. your users/customers. Mm-hmm. I can think of a good example, but I'm not going to mention it. There are other companies that, yeah, they solve a problem for you and therefore you're their customer. And that's where I think Apple could do this right. Mm-hmm. We'll see if it happens.
Yeah. All right. So everything everyone's been saying so far, I think is totally valid. And it's once again, we're in a therapy session for Jeff. And what you have helped me realize is that the visceral negative reaction that I'm having to ads in Apple Maps stems from Google and the way that they have historically obtrusively placed ads where they prevent me from seeing what I actually want to see.
Yeah. Not just Google. Everybody is doing that, right? I mean, maybe just a couple of weeks, last week, the week before, there were tons of articles about like gentrification of websites and like especially news websites and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Like where it's basically you can't even find the content even if you want to. So yeah, I get that. Said I. My hope is always that Apple does it in a way that makes sense. I mean, I'm just thinking, what's the closest analog on Apple's side? That's the App Store. We have paid search results in the App Store. Is it all good? No.
No.
There's problems. There's like abuse, I would call it almost. But it's also fine. It's not such a big deal.
And I do tend to without even really looking at the ad, pieces just scroll right past in whatever service it is.
Yes. I don't know if that's everybody or just us, but like I've developed a very, very good filter in my brain for basically any advertisement.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, Dave, you've been suspiciously quiet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I mean, it's just part of life, honestly. I mean, we're dealing with ads all the time, even if you pay for it. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, if you do use Google, you use any other map service, they're gonna add them. I mean, Apple's Apple's in the business. They're in the business of making money, and that's another revenue stream. They're expanding services like crazy. That's been their biggest increase in profit in a long time. You're seeing their profit numbers just continually to increase, and it's not just with the hardware. It's the services. The services have just gone gangbusters. And so, that's pretty much what I think. I mean, it's the map. It was inevitable.
It was inevitable.
As long as they don't go full on Microsoft and put ads all over macOS, I think we're fine.
Yeah, right.
Oh. Yeah. It amazes me that that Microsoft thought this is a good idea and then actually rolled it out.
Mm-hmm.
And on that side, people saying, oh, it's just a way of life. It's just the way it is. I mean, that's akin to people a couple hundred years ago saying, cholera, it's just a way of life.
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah. I just noticed the time. We need to move on because we haven't done cool things yet. So I believe that means I need to come up with a cool transition. Like, hey, you know what else is cool? Technologies. And why are they cool? Because they are supporting the British Tech Network. Aw Technologies is making sure that we have the resources to live stream shows every single week, a place for the website to live, and a place for all the show files to live so you can watch and listen to your favorite episodes over and over as often as you want. And let's be honest, at any time you have the power team that I get to sit here and bask in their glory, like today, why would you not want to listen to these episodes over and over? So without their help, we would not be able to do the things we do. It takes a lot of resources to make this happen. So thank you to Aw Technologies for being our sponsor. For those of you that don't know who Aw Technologies is, that means you just haven't been paying attention in past episodes, but it's okay. I'll fill you in real fast. You need to have location monitoring for a remote location, construction, railroad, whatever. Aw Technologies makes that happen for you. And they have all the resources to give you just what you need. And you don't have to be just in the UK to take advantage of Aw Technologies services. So their website, so you can go check them out, is Aw Technologies. So that's awetechnologies.co.uk. And thank you, Aw Technologies, for sponsoring the British Tech Network. Okay, now it's cool time thing. No, it's not. It's live chat explanation thing. You know, as Brian and Chaffin and I say on the Context Machine, top men. Okay, Patrice, can you help me out? Because you are far more qualified than I am, basically at just being a human. But yeah, please.
Are you running on a 6502 today? Is that what's happening?
I fear that I am.
Okay. So I'll make it short because we've been running a little bit long. Live.britishtechnetwork.com is where we live stream. Go there Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time for this very show. Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show. We talk about chip design and other fun stuff in space and just technology other than Apple. And britishtechnetwork.com/chat is where you find the transcript. Just go there if you need any of the links, if you want to see what we talked about. And today is April 3rd, 2026. So select that date if you want to see what we talked about in the chat today. And all of that is sponsored by Aw Technologies. Just want to mention that.
Awesome. Thank you. And I think it's appropriate that I point out right now that there are five of us on the show today.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them are handlers to try and keep me under control and on task.
That's funny.
And we're failing miserably.
Well, you know, it's probably the pay scale, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You pay what
we need
you
more
get,
zeros.
Right? Yeah. Yes. In
yeah.
Front.
Yep. Okay. Now it's time for some cool things. And Patrice first, though. Thank you for handling the live chat explanation, because
Sure. Clearly
I am not capable of many things today. So, Dave, you have the first cool thing.
guess.
Yeah, this goes on my cool thing from last week. I bought that Thunderbolt 5 dock. I'm just tired of feeding, running around my office trying to find a real good cable. And I'm also tired of spending really expensive money for Thunderbolt 5 cables because they are expensive. So I came across 2 models. I kind of narrowed down to this one. This is a simple 120 gigabit per second Thunderbolt 5 cable. It goes up to that much bandwidth, as well as 16K or dual 8K and 240 watts of power. And it works with Thunderbolt 4, Thunderbolt 5, all the Macs that use that. And it's black. It's cheap. Here it is here. This cable is this extremely good quality. I have that cable tester that I plugged in, make sure that it, you don't get these fake cables, but it's full out. It went all green, so it has all the power you need and not to worry about it anymore. And that's what I've been pretty much using lately. You still got to keep around your 3.2 USB and 4.0 USB just for if you have some older devices, but I'm trying to just outfit my entire system here, just having everything with Thunderbolt 4 or Thunderbolt 5. And these cables are cheap. It's only $17. I mean, you're spending at OWC probably about $40 or $50 for one of these cables. So, So this is real good quality. And check it out. There's 2 of them I had in these models. I've tried them both, and both are working great. So this is a great option.
That's awesome. And the price, I was shocked when I saw that.
Yeah, me too. When I found them, and I said, yeah, well, I'll give it a shot. And I've been using them, and they work great.
That's awesome. Okay, Patrice, it is your turn.
Yeah, my turn. Okay. It's the thing I've already mentioned earlier. It's the David Pogue, Apple, the first 50 years book. I bought the audiobook version because, well, for one, I usually prefer audiobooks. 2, it is narrated by him. 3, it's different than the print book. And I will actually probably after the show go to my local bookstore and see if I can order it because it doesn't seem to be available here in Europe, but I'll see what they can do.
Really?
Yeah, for some reason, don't ask me. It's just nowhere available, but I'll get it somewhere. But it's the audio version is, so the book itself is it's kind of a compendium of the first 50 years of Apple. So it's kind of the intention is this is the one book if you need to like understand something, look something up or whatever in the first 50 years, you don't need any other book. You go to that one. David has quite some experience doing this and working on Apple stuff, but also he got very, very deep access to Apple. I mean, yeah, there's stuff they didn't talk about. Right, especially recent things and what they've been working on. And towards the end of the book, there's more like the outside perspective because, of course, people within Apple will not talk about certain things that are happening. Mm-hmm. It was not written by Apple, right? So it was him independently, but he sent them the first like a sample chapter. And they gave him access to the archives, access to historians, and like I don't know how many freaking hours of interviews with basically everybody that is still in Apple, and of course all the people outside that are still alive at least. So like he got a lot of information, and I think all of us we live and breathe Apple and do it sometimes professionally, semi-professionally, whatever you want to call it. You would think we've heard all the stories, seen everything, we know everything. I was surprised there's a lot of little things in there that you will discover that you didn't know about. That was kind of obvious in hindsight, but like there was actually already a touchscreen Mac. It's just nobody remembers it because it was a Newton version of a Mac, basically the E-Mate. Stuff
the
like that.
It was so cool. I wish I had one of those.
Yeah, things like that. There's like so many little stories, all the transitions. And the audio the audio version and the printed versions are differ in, of course, you like the print version has a lot of beautiful pictures from the archives and whatever. The audio version, you can't have that, right? But he has a lot of audio snippets that he can include. So we get like original audio from the Think Different ads, for example, and from like things that people said over time that he saw had also in the interview sometimes and so on. Like he included little audio snippets here and there. It's not a lot, but there are some. So it's really well done. I'm almost done with the book. It's like 20 something hours. It's just a really good book. So Apple, the first 50 years. And there's a little bonus thing in the book that he, like, if you listen to it, he will tell you. Oh, there's a special cool Easter egg in there, basically.
That's awesome. I have not bought the book yet, and I feel like I need to.
Yeah. And I want to own. That's one of the few books I really want to own. So that's why I'm going to great lengths to get it.
You're prominently featured in it, Jeff.
Yes.
I'm sure I am. And it's all good. All of it.
Yes.
Well, yeah, it's all true, Jeff. Let's put it that way.
I'll take it. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Well, being he is going to be in MacStock, so you can get the book.
And he'll sign it too. Mm-hmm. Get it signed.
I'm thinking about doing the MacStock thing with just I can do a pre-order to pick up my book at MacStock.
See, I knew Dave had it in
within arm's reach.
With arm's reach. For like the last literally.
Week, like, staring at me. I got to start reading it because he's going to be on my show next week. So I'll be ready for it. So.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. You know what you do, Jeff, is you get a copy of the book and just underline certain points and write bullshit next to it.
Yeah, give him back an copy. edited version.
I mean that's the worth the cost of the book.
That really is. Right. Yeah, show up in the line at MacStock to have you sign my book. Get up to the front of the line and say, "Hey, David, great to see you again. So I was going through the book and there's some problems."
I mean,
and just stop the whole line while I critique his book right in front of me.
It's not any different than Retro Rewatch, so I think you should do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. True. Yep. Yeah. Okay. So that's cool. And Marty, I just clicked on the link for your cool thing, and that's actually a really cool thing too. So tell us about it.
Yeah, I just, you know, I had a cool thing I've been thinking about all week, and I'll save that for another time. But during the show, I got all excited about old iPod technology and did some searching and found Elite Obsolete Electronics. Now, I also did some ChatGPT to check them out, and they're a small group business. They say, yeah, they're reliable. There are some customer concerns that are on there about sometimes shipping times and times that it looked. But I was surprised about the inventory that they have, and frankly, kind of the prices that they have for some of this old nostalgic. And I just looked at iPods. And it's a tremendous inventory, and you can read about them, and you can read about you know, accessories and other things that are available with it. But yeah, it's tempting to me to take the risk and go ahead and get an old nostalgic device. Some of these have been repaired. You can look at them and see new batteries have been put in. In some cases, they've increased the memory from what the standard memory is with them. So pretty cool.
That's very cool. And as I scroll through the page, I do see many of the iPods that I owned. Sadly, I do not have the first gen Nano. I had two. And because of course I did. And one in white, one in black. And both of them though had the battery swelling thing. And so Apple replaced them, which meant that I got a different model Nano as a replacement for both of those. And that would have been cool to still have one of those.
$29.99.
Yeah, well, I could buy it and throw it in the box with all the other iPods. Good.
Just so you have it.
Just so I have it, yep. All right. Chuck, it is now your turn.
Okay. So this deserves just a little quick background. First of all, I had some business travel this week, which involved a lot of driving. I really, as much as I love podcasts, a good audiobook is just makes the hours melt away. So I've been wanting to tackle this for a while. The second background here is I grew up with parents who lived through the Depression, who saw the stock market crash. And it clearly left an amazing mark on them. And so as a result, it leaves a bit of a mark on me. But it's always just been this, you know, kind of third-party experience event. Then I heard about this book by Andrew Ross Sorkin, 1929, Inside the Greatest Crash in Wall Street History, and How It Shattered a Nation. And I decided to give it a shot. And it is fascinating if you have any interest in this at all, because my personal impression, you know, again, was that this was just a one event. You know, it happened. Oh, my God. It was, you know, one day in history, and it affected and resonated for months and years. And it really was a lot more than that. And so the politics that were involved, the reckless investings, you know, you come to understand why we have a lot of the financial regulations today and how some of those came about as a result of this. If this is your thing, or you even have a mild interest, take a shot at it, because it is really, really well done. And they specifically go through and dispel a lot of the rumors and the myths about the crash. You know, like there were people jumping out of all the windows, you know, because the stock market crashed, is one that they dispelled to about a 99% degree. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not a huge history person, unless it's tech, but this one really resonated with me, and I think it might resonate with you.
You know, that's Chuck, really cool. My mom was a child of the Depression too, and that so influenced how she looked at money, managed money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this sounds like an interesting story.
It really is, Marty. I mean, the intertwining of politics of the day and finances of the day are just fascinating, to at least to me. And again, you know, it kind of shows what happened, that the stuff that we have today, the regulations, the deposit guarantees and all, were not just arbitrary things that somebody said, oh, this would be a great idea. You know, there were reasons for it. And a lot of those came out of this one particular historical event.
Hmm. All right. Everyone's kept it very cool. So once again, it falls on me to see if I can keep it highbrow, or if I'm just going to totally ruin it. And I think this week I might have kept it highbrow. I'm bringing your skepticism, Patrice, is totally valid. So I'm bringing, it's actually an article that Jason Snell wrote for a Six Colors blog. It's the content of this post that mm-hmm. matters. It's a list of really interesting books about Apple's history. And so having a nice collection like this all in one place, so that you can't, it's kind of redundant. That's what a collection is. But to have a list like this where you can go and find a bunch of really interesting books about Apple's history is nice. And it even includes a book that is going to be coming out in a couple months, I believe, or next month, Steve Jobs in Exile. So it's about Steve Jobs' life when he left Apple, and what was going on at Next for him. And so I think that will probably be an interesting book. And the book on the list that you might think would be really bad is Gil Emilio's book, On the Firing Line, My 500 Days at Apple. Mm-hmm. I read that book when it came out, and I found it to be absolutely fascinating. Because it wasn't a oh, poor me book by Gil Emilio. He was very, very frank about what was going on, decisions he made.
Yeah.
And it really shows just how dysfunctional Apple was at the time. Yeah. And he has the self-awareness to know that for Apple to become what it has, they needed a fall guy. And that was his job.
That, and I mean, that was also in the David Polk book. He was needed also to keep the company alive long enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So him and the new CFO basically together, like they had to do things that were not popular just to keep the company around. And this so kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
He was the person for that. He wasn't the person for everything, for anything else, but for that he was good.
Yeah, yes, I agree. So anyhow, Jason's list, it's what, like, what is it? 10 books. So there's a lot of really great books on the list.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Okay. So it is now time for us to start wrapping up, because once again, big surprise, we have run over. Marty, where can people find you?
Oh, you can find all my stuff at thepodtalk.net. That's the website that has the different podcasts and vodcasts that we do. Most prominent, the two prominent ones, I think, are the Neo Notebook, which is Sunday nights at 9 p.m. on YouTube. Dave's on it with me, and also Eric's on it. And Brett Kennedy is on it, a friend of MacStock. And then a Monday night with Vision Profiles. You can catch all the rest of the places I'm on. I've got Dave's show listed. I've got Chuck's show listed. And British Tech Network the Mac show. Just go to thepodtalk.net.
Awesome. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, every week here on the big show on Thursdays, the Mac show on Fridays, everything I'm doing, social media links, podcasts, projects, blog, random occasional blog posts, and all the cool things that I've ever picked, or that I've picked since, what is it, late 2019, on my website, thepatrice.com, and with you on our already mentioned podcast show, Retro Rewatch, where we rewatch retro TV shows. And another thing that is very Apple are the gates, right? And the episode about to release, well, today, tomorrow, somewhere this weekend, is Watergate. So the original gate, basically.
The controversial gate.
Yeah, that was the first one. And I mean, we've had a lot of Apple-related gates since. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And Dave, how about you?
Well, you could find me on InTouch with iOS at InTouchWithiOS.com. YouTube channel is youtube.com/InTouchWithiOS. And like Marty mentioned, the Neo Notebook on Sundays with the MacBook Neo. Mondays, Vision Profiles with Vision Pro. Tuesday nights with Mac Voices Live, Thursday nights with In Touch with iOS, and Fridays here on the Mac Show. Social media, Blue Sky, Mastodon, Dave G65.
Awesome. Okay, Chuck, it's your turn.
MacVoices.com. That's where you find everything I do and everybody I talk to. We have officially kicked off the road to MacStock, so you'll be hearing a lot from the speakers and maybe some attendees, maybe some supporters, who knows who. That's what makes it interesting. The live show, as was mentioned previously, is on YouTube at youtube.com/MacVoicesTV on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. And on the socials, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. All right. So for me, Jay Gammon on the various social medias, mostly active right now on Mastodon and PixelFed and Blue Sky, And then for shows, Chuck's Mac Voices Live on Tuesdays, Dave's In Touch with iOS on Thursdays, here on the British Tech Network for the Big Show and the Mac Show. Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine, and as Patrice has already mentioned, we do Retro Rewatch. Also, I'm doing a lot of switching around and consolidating stuff, so it will probably be easier. Well, not probably. Let's be positive. It will be much easier soon for everyone to find all my stuff in one place. It's slowly coming together. Anyhow, so with all of that said, thank you to the four of you for first being amazing, wonderful friends. And I do love all of you. You really are just wonderful people. And then thank you just for making my Friday mornings an absolute delight. Even a day like today where I got to bed way too late and still had to get up early, totally worth it just to spend time with all of you. So thank you for being you. Everyone that's watching, listening live, participating in the live chat, thank you for being here. Everyone that watches and listens to the show recordings later, thank you for being part of this as well. Ewan, thanks for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And Odd Technologies, thank you for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. Okay, so with all of that said, one other quick little thing. As I look at everyone that's here, all of us except for Patrice, unfortunately, are going to be at Mac Stock in July. And we are all speakers this year. So come to Mac Stock and hang out with us and see everyone's really great presentations. It'll be great to hang out with you. And if I was smart, I would have had the link to Mac Stock ready to go to drop in the live chat. So it's there.
MacStockConference.com.
There we go.
Make sure you mention that David Pogue is going to be there on Friday night and Friday for the day.
And he'll be doing a book signing.
And a book signing. He's going to be doing an amazing presentation. And you know, he's going to be funny and do a lot of his Apple song parodies.
He is a really good public speaker. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Me too.
Yeah. All right. So with all of that said, it is now time for me to say, hey, everyone, don't forget to come back next Thursday for the Big Show. Then join us again on Friday for the Mac Show. And all of you, have a great weekend.